Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, fantasy football owners. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that will make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that really matter. We do the work so that you can just make smart decisions. Sit back and amaze your friends. Your wide receiver one won't change, but it's the nitty-gritty, it's the flex and the waiver wire pickups. That's where your league is won or lost. So follow Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Ron, it's great the Cubs got the sweep. I want to ask you, though, about the Pete Alonso home run. 429 feet, according to StatCast. No way was that 429.
Who is the guy running StatCast that day? Snoop Dogg? I mean, seriously. I mean, come on.
Fun if Snoop Dogg ran StatCast. That'd be real fun.
Rami Makhlouf in for Matt Spiegel. Hit and run. 670 the score. And that Odyssey app. And joining us now, you just heard him right there, MLB StatCast writer. Also, he'll be part of the alternate cast of Braves and Phillies along with Jason Benetti, Eduardo Perez tonight on ESPN2. Pleasure to welcome in Mike Petriello. Mike, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
I want to talk some bigger picture baseball stuff and how this season has gotten off to a start. But first, let me bring you in on the conversations we've had about the two teams here in town. And I'll start with the Cubs. And Mike, I'm just not sure if I should let them pull me back in, if I'd be a fool to jump on the Cubs bandwagon, because I just don't know if this good play we've seen recently is sustainable. Namely, the long ball isn't happening. Their last 16 hits have all been singles, and they're just sort of playing old school, station to station, 90 feet at a time baseball. Is this something that the Cubs can keep up, or do you think that this is a bit of a mirage that we're all seeing right now?
I think it depends a lot on whether you're interested, I guess, in winning or what kind of style of baseball you like. Because if you're into baseball from like 1975, you're probably loving this, right? Like everybody's like, you know, moving the guys along and playing small ball. And don't get me wrong, I agree there's too many strikeouts in baseball right now. I don't think you can win long-term like this. You know, like if you look at over the last 2 years, 5 years, 100 years, the team that hits more homers in a game wins about 77% of the time. You know, and obviously there are guys on this team with power. I think we all expect that Jock Peterson would have more than one home run right now. You know, and some of the guys are doing a little better than expected, Chris Bryant certainly. But when I look at this team, it's still early enough in the season. What I try to do is just kind of look back at what I thought about them before the year. You know, and is there anything I've seen so far that is like meaningfully different to me and not just like a small sample size thing? And I think the one thing that is meaningfully different to me is I'm in on Chris Bryant. Like, I think this is a real thing. He's going to have a great year. And then some of the other stuff I was concerned about has kind of come out to play. Like, I was very worried about the starting rotation, except for I thought Kyle Hendricks would be better than he is. I was worried about some of the guys rebounding. Like, you look at Peterson, he's never hit lefties. He was never going to hit like he did in spring training. And obviously he's been a little worse than that. The one thing they have in their favor is that the Central is still a mess, and I don't think anyone's going to run away with this division. So do they have a shot? Yes. Is it going to happen if they're just hitting singles? No.
Let me put a positive spin on it. This small ball that they're playing right now, let's say that the power does come back and gets somewhat consistent. Isn't this, if they can keep that club in their bag of moving 90 feet at a time when the home runs aren't coming, but find the power, find the home run ball, could this be a more complete offense than we've seen from the Cubs since 2016?
I think that's definitely true. It just, that feels somewhat unlikely. I mean, you know, hitting singles and hitting home runs are not completely unrelated things. I mean, you could hit more singles if you didn't try to hit the ball quite as hard. You know, you'd lose some value. I don't really see this offense as being the kind of team that can do all of it. And there's few teams that can do that. You know, the Dodgers at their best, I think, are capable of doing that, making a lot of contact and hitting for power. Maybe one or two other clubs, but this team is, it's just not built like that. And I appreciate that when they're not hitting home runs, they're working on other things because the small ball adds value. No argument there. But I don't see that they're going to be magically for the rest of the season a small ball team and a powerful team. You know, that doesn't happen very often.
Mike, let me ask you a question that I will preface by saying, even in your infinite baseball wisdom, you might not have the answer to, because if you did, you might be in a front office right now. And it's this, and it's not just this season, but I think Cubs fans are a little bit befuddled and beside themselves to look at this last 4 or 5 year span. We look at Chris Bryant and we go, that's a good baseball player. We look at Anthony Rizzo and Javi Baez and even and Ian Happ, and we go, these are good baseball players. And I don't think we're wrong in that assessment, yet somehow, some way, they keep falling short of expectations. How do we wrap our heads around that, Mike? We're not wrong about them being good baseball players, are we? And yet this team never hasn't gotten back to where they were in 2016.
No, you're absolutely right about that. I do think there's part of me that looks back at that 16 season and says that was, like, in some sense, a magical one-time only thing. You know, like, everything had to go right to get to that point. And for obviously, you know, understandable reasons, they had to trade away a decent part of the farm system to get there. You know, they traded for Chapman, and that cost them Torres, who might be playing middle infield. And I know not that year, but later on, they traded for Eloy Jimenez, who could be adding power in the outfield. And you understand why, obviously. But I do think this is sort of the other side of that. I also think, you know, it's been, what, 5 years now since that World Series. Like, it's not usual that teams keep cores, you know, for that long. We heard what Theo Epstein said before he left, that, you know, maybe they were overdue for some changes. And when you look at the players who are still there, who were there then, like, which one of their career paths is the most surprising? Like, Rizzo, aside from last year, is been a pretty consistently good player. Bryant has been good when he's been healthy. That's always the thing. And the more I think about Baez, the more I think maybe that one great year was kind of the outlier, and this is sort of who he is now, you know? So there were obviously other things they could have done. They didn't do a whole lot to improve the team this winter, which is pretty disappointing, I think, to everybody. They traded away Darvish, and they don't have really anyone who throws that hard in the rotation, except for maybe like Alzolay. This was not a team that was set up to really defend the division title that well this year, and I think that's what you're seeing.
I'm talking with Mike Petriello, MLB.com. Catch him on the alternate StatCast showing of Braves and Phillies tonight, along with Jason Benetti on ESPN2. Let's move over to this White Sox team and the conversation that we were having before we brought you on, Mike. And I was getting quite a bit of pushback, including from my producer, Sean Anderson, and just asking the question, have we maybe been too hard on Tony La Russa? And I'm not making excuses for him not knowing that rule earlier this week, and I'm not saying that there aren't decisions that you can point to, and Sean did, of two or three games where you can say maybe Tony La Russa cost him a baseball game, but just 30,000 foot view, big picture, this team has dealt with some pretty serious, substantial injuries so far this year, and you turn around and you're looking at an 18-13 ball club with the largest run differential in baseball, with the lowest ERA in baseball. And if I just told you everything that La Russa and the White Sox would be facing, and that's the end result after 31 games, I think most people would be pretty pleased with that, wouldn't they, Mike?
I agree with you for sure, especially when you factor in the guys who aren't there, right? Like Jimenez and Luis Robert and everybody else. I think you can give credit for a couple things. Obviously, being in first place with the injuries, certainly. And I have a lot of respect for the fact that he's continually stood up after those issues and taken the responsibility for them, you know, and said, this is on me. I made a mistake. I'm not going to let it happen again. Like, that's great. That's exactly what you want to hear from a manager, not throwing his players under the bus. But it's, I don't know, it's concerning. Like, when he came in, everybody was worried would he, you know, relate to the young players and all that. And so far, from what I can tell, that hasn't been an issue whatsoever. So that's credit to him. But if you think about his career as a manager, like, what was he always famous for? You know, he was the guy on top of everything. You know, he knew all the rules. He was in charge of everything. He was ahead of the game. And, you know, once or twice, okay, big deal. But now it's like, he didn't know a rule? That's kind of rough. And it's not just that kind of stuff with the rules. It's also like, you know, letting Billy Hamilton, who cannot hit, like, hit in big situations when you've got pinch hitters on the bench, letting starters go deep into games. Like, it's a lot of strategy from 10 or 12 years ago, And I think he has absolutely earned the right to say, okay, I've made some mistakes and I'm going to wear those and we're going to do better going forward. Cause I think that's absolutely possible, you know, based on his track record, based on the talent that's here. But I certainly understand why White Sox fans are, you know, kind of up in arms a little bit over this, because it's happened a couple times now.
Yeah, Mike, and what I was saying was not that, well, we can definitively say today Tony La Russa was the right hire, but I also don't think we can definitively say today he was the wrong hire, which a lot of people do want to say. What I said to Sean and what I've said to Sox fans when we were having that discussion is, for all your concerns, we won't know if those are legit concerns and he's lacking in those areas that you think he might be lacking until it's too late, and we won't know if these potential positive outcomes and him learning this team and learning from his mistakes, we won't know that until it's too late, but in a good sense. Either way, I just think it's way too early to say we know what kind of manager Tony La Russa will be for this White Sox club.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think part of it too that, you know, maybe the fans weren't happy about is just how it was reported that the process went, where it was very clearly right. This was an ownership hire, not the front office so much. And is that the process you want, where everything's supposed to be so collaborative? And Rick Hahn's obviously said all the right things about that clearly. But I just don't think, you know, there's not a great history of like ownership decisions in rosters and managers paying off. But I agree with you otherwise. You know, we're going to see how this plays out.
I'm talking with Mike Petriello, MLB StatCast writer for MLB.com. How about this White Sox pitching staff? 25 1/3 consecutive scoreless innings now in their last five games. Longest streak by starting pitchers since going back to 2010. I mentioned lowest ERA in the American League. We have to expect some regression, right? Like this is otherworldly what we've seen from this White Sox team, but how much of it is sustainable? How much regression or falling back to earth should we expect from this starting staff?
Yeah, certainly not endless scoreless innings, but this rotation is just so fascinating to me because on one hand, like, I am so in on the Carlos Rodon story, you know, like everything about it seems sustainable and real and his velocity's up and, you know, just as far as like a really cool story coming back from what he's been through. But it was funny the other day, it seemed like he really didn't rely on his slider that much, you know, and that's what he was known for coming up. And all of a sudden he's just like pumping 97-mile-an-hour fastballs in there. So that's really cool. And I have never been a terribly big fan of Dylan Cease. So to watch him like actually start to throw strikes and harness that incredible stuff has been a lot of fun to watch. And then on the other hand, I just realized that Dallas Keuchel has like 4 strikeouts per 9 innings, which I know he's a ground ball guy. That seems wildly unsustainable. Like, I don't think you can sustain in baseball like that. So I would say pretty concerned about him. But if you'd asked me at the beginning of the season, you know, what my biggest concern about the White Sox was, it was probably rotation depth, because I would have said Giolito, Lynn, and Keuchel, that's a pretty good first three. You know, I don't have a lot of faith maybe in Cease, and Rodon wasn't even really on the map, you know. And now you look at the team, and it's like, wow, I think Keuchel might be the fifth starter. That's pretty good, you know. So not to mention Kopech in there as well. So is it sustainable like this? No. But I'm pretty in on this being one of the, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 best rotations in baseball.
What do you think is the best role for Kopech? I forget who I was talking to last time I was here on The Score, but I said – the way I'm up here in Milwaukee, that's my weekday job, Mike. I host the afternoon show for The Score's sister station, The Fan. And the way I hear people talk about Michael Kopech and the way he's being used by the White Sox right now and the stuff and everything else, it reminds me a lot of Josh Hader. Is that what you think is probably the most effective way to use Michael Kopech at this point, as sort of that secret weapon, secret ace coming out of the bullpen to get high leverage outs at any point in the game?
I don't think so. I mean, I certainly see the appeal, and, you know, maybe when you get to October, if he's not one of your top three guys, then certainly that's an option. But, you know, long-term, you want him to be a starter. You know, you don't want him in the Hader role if you can avoid it. And I think he's capable of being a starter. So I do sort of like what they did to, you know, it had been a long time since he pitched competitively in a game. It'd been several years, really. So to kind of like work him back in, just get him back on the mound, get him the feel of Major League Baseball again, and then kind of ease him back into the rotation. Because as much as I do like the top 5 starters that they've got, there is no likelihood that they're all going to stay healthy and whole for an entire 6-month season. It's just not going to happen. You know, you need to have other guys who can pitch. And so I think that's kind of a good role for Kopech, because you're certainly not going to expect, after his history, he's going to go out there and give you 200 innings either. You know, you're going to need 6, 7, 8, 9 different starters. And so I think for this year, working him back in that role, I like it. And then hopefully next year, you know, full speed go as a starting pitcher.
Talking with Mike Petriello, StatCast writer for MLB.com. Catch him on the StatCast broadcast of Braves and Phillies tonight, ESPN2, along with Jason Benetti. Want to get into some bigger picture baseball stuff with you, Mike. And last night, we had our fourth no-hitter of the season. That's the earliest this has happened in a calendar year since a very, very long time ago. I guess 1917 is what I'm looking at here. I was blown away when I just read that number in my notes because I can't believe that that's right. But are no-hitters becoming less impressive in this era of strikeouts and very few hits and everything is either a walk, a strikeout, or a home run? Should we be looking at no-hitters through a different prism in 2021?
I would say no. I would say they're still pretty cool. Now listen, if we get to the end of the year and there's been 20 different no-hitters, then maybe I'll change my tune on that. But the reason I still think they're pretty impressive, two reasons, really. One is that, you know, the quality of hitters, I believe, are better than they've ever been. I know the numbers aren't there, and that's because pitchers are so dominant. But the second thing is, if you're going to get a no-hitter, not a combined no-hitter, like from one guy, that means he threw a complete game and most likely a shutout. And seeing complete games are still pretty cool, right? Like, we just don't see those as often anymore. And I still think it's cool when you see a guy go nine innings. I think it's especially cool when it's a shutout and a no-hitter. I think it's easier is not the right word, but maybe it's more likely now than ever to throw one just because strikeouts are up and batting average is down and everything is it's in the favor of a no-hitter. So I really do believe we're going to break the record. The record is 7 in a season. I think we're going to break it by, like, August 1st. And I hope that doesn't cheapen it, but I'm excited to see that.
How many of those will be the Cleveland Indians, who have already been the victims of two of these four no-hitters, Mike?
Somehow all of them.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was this new baseball, the de-juiced baseball that Major League Baseball is using this year. And there was a piece by Fangraphs and a guy who I'm sure you're familiar with. I think he does fine work. Eno Saris, his takeaway from this study that Fangraphs did, he summed up in a tweet. He said, so we got the worst possible outcome. Fewer homers, but the lighter ball led to higher velocities and more movement, so more strikeouts. Sweet, as Eno puts it. Is that what we're getting? And do you think Major League Baseball, we've seen them change course with the baseballs of juicing them and de-juicing them a number of times over the last few years. Do you think we see yet another change as they're not getting what they hope to get out of these less bouncy baseballs that they're using this year?
Well, I think this time is a little different because I agree with you that changes in the ball over the last couple of years have led to an increase in homers. But from everything we know, those were, you know, unintentional manufacturing changes, right? This time it was very clearly intentional. Like, they came out and said, this is what we're going to try to do. And I think the intent was, if it's harder to hit a home run, then maybe batters will, you know, try to put it in play a little more, you know, to get value that way. I don't know that it's going to work that way because you have to make life harder on pitchers first. You know, like, strikeouts are not coming from home runs or the shift or launch angle or anything. They're coming from the fact that every pitcher's throwing 101 miles an hour and they've got ridiculous breaking stuff. So I hope we don't end up with, like, the worst of both worlds here, where there's not as many home runs and there's not as much offense otherwise. But I like that changes are being made to try to attack the problem. I accept this change may not work out in a positive way, and that may lead to other changes, but you got to do something. Otherwise, in 10 years, we'll be at a 40% strikeout rate.
Yeah, if Major League Baseball really wants to cut this down, we're going to have to see some legitimate rules changes, like some of the stuff that Theo Epstein is playing around in some of the lower levels, right, Mike? That's what's going to eventually have to happen for us to see more action on the bases, more balls in play, etc. Pitchers are just evolving too fast for hitters nowadays, and you throw in the shift and everything else that's working against offense, and it just seems like fundamental changes are going to have to be made to this sport. Am I exaggerating with that statement?
No, I agree with you 100%. And you're in such a tough spot too, like, as a sporter, right? Because you have to make rule changes in order to give hitters a better chance to make contact. Like, they're not just going to be able to organically do it on their own. And yet, whenever you make any change, you have such a vocal subset of, like, traditional fans who are like, oh, the game hasn't changed. The game is perfect. Leave it alone. And it's like, come on. The game has changed. Like, you know, it used to be we didn't have a DH, or we didn't have integrated rosters. Or if you want to go back really far, the batter could tell the pitcher where he wanted him to throw it. Like, the game always changes. And now the players are making these changes, not through rule changes, but through the way they prepare and through the way they train. And since we've got these incredible athletes who are bigger and better and faster than before, I think it's perfectly reasonable to say, okay, well, then the confines of the sport need to change around them, whether that's a change in strike zone, moving the mound back or down, or limiting the number of pitchers. Or there's an endless amount of theories on what to do, but you can't just sit there and do nothing, or else we're just going to have endlessly increasing strikeouts.
Do any of the experimental rules changes that they're playing with right now pique your interest and you think accomplish what baseball is trying to accomplish in this new era of baseball whenever these rules are implemented?
I don't know, and that's why they're experimenting. What I really like what they're doing now, and this is different than when they thought about doing this 2 years ago, right? Because they had announced some of these changes 2 years ago, and then because of the pandemic, and that never happened. But originally, they were going to try all these changes kind of at once, and now they're doing it separately, like one rule change in AAA and another in AA, and so on and so on. I like that a lot because it's a lot easier to identify if it worked or not if you're not trying to test multiple things at the same time, you know? So does moving the mound back give hitters more time to see the ball, or does it give pitchers more time to have their breaking balls break? I don't know, but we're finally going to have some actual, like, actionable evidence to figure it out, and I think that's what we really need.
That's Mike Petriello. You can find his work at MLB.com, and tonight on the alternate cast, Braves and Phillies with Jason Benetti. They'll have the stat cast for you, along with Eduardo Perez on ESPN2. Mike, really appreciate the time and the insight, man. Great stuff.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
And he joins me on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Quick break, and then on the other side, Patrick Mooney had a piece about the Cubs that has kept me up at night for like literally two weeks now. I've been thinking about this piece by Patrick Mooney, and where really all this might have gone wrong for the Cubs, and we didn't get this dynasty we all thought we might get. I'll talk about that right after this. Rami Makhlouf in for Matt Spiegel on 670 The Score, Hit and Run.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that will make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that really matter. We do the work so that you can just make smart decisions. Sit back and amaze your friends. Your wide receiver one won't change, but it's the nitty-gritty, it's the flex, and the waiver wire pickups. That's where your league is won or lost. So follow Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo, if you've persevered through. You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame.
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Rami Makhlouf in for Matt Spiegel this Sunday morning. Happy Mother's Day to my mom. Hi, Mom. Happy Mother's Day, and all the moms out there, especially the baseball mom. There's probably a bunch of moms out there right now. She just should be getting pampered, flowers, getting ready to go out to brunch, but they got a Little League game that they're driving their kid to right now. They're going to sit there and pretend it's good baseball for 2.5 hours while that thing just gets hurled around the field, and nobody really knows how to throw or catch or hit. But mom's going to sit there and pretend it's great. And that's what makes moms great. So happy Mother's Day to all the moms, including mine, who did just that very thing for this young man a long, long time ago. But a couple weeks ago, And yes, this has been sticking in my craw for a couple of weeks. I read a piece by Patrick Mooney at The Athletic. And the headline reads, "Go back to Joe Maddon's exit to put the Cubs' lame duck season in perspective." And not only does it put it in perspective, and he's talking about this year's lame duck season and comparing the two. But what this got me to thinking was, is this where this all went wrong for this group of Chicago Cubs? This cloud of uncertainty that's been hanging over this team for going on four full seasons now. Is that why we haven't seen them reach their full potential? Is this where this thing really started to go wrong? 312-644-6767. And I know I'm reaching way back, almost 3 years, to try and diagnose what went wrong here and why we didn't get more out of this core of guys than what we all thought we should have gotten. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I don't appreciate what the Cubs have been for the last 5 years. I don't need to tell you guys what we've been through as Cubs fans, and one World Series is enough to fill my heart with contentment and joy for a long, long time, much less five straight playoff appearances, bunch of division championships, three NLCS appearances. Not an easy thing to do. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't more juice to squeeze from this lemon. I don't know if that means more World Series championships, just more competitive baseball, or whatever the case might be. But in reading this piece by Patrick Mooney that revisits that lame duck season for Joe Maddon and compares it to this lame duck season for so many Cubs, it got me wondering. Because when Theo Epstein, in that offseason between 2017 and 2018, said, "We're not running away from Joe in the least bit. We're sort of investing in improvement for this year, and that's where our focus is." And he says investing, but really what he meant to say was gambling on improvement this year, and that's where our focus is. What Theo Epstein and the Cubs were betting on that year was that the pressure of keeping Joe Maddon employed as the Cubs manager would be enough of a motivator for Joe Maddon and the rest of this roster. And it was laid out and turned out to be a make or break year for the Cubs manager. And let's look at that decision for a second. Let's look at putting Joe Maddon in that position, that situation, for just 1 second. You're 2 years removed from winning a World Series. You have a core of young guys in their mid to late 20s who are basically going through their developmental years here at the major league level. Theo Epstein will be the first to tell you that progress is not linear. You already got one MVP season in the World Series season of 2016 out of Chris Bryant. That year of 2018, Javi Baez finished a close second to Christian Yelich in the MVP voting. And Anthony Rizzo was as consistent and as good as you get at the first base position. And Wilson Contreras was emerging as one of the top catchers in Major League Baseball. So since Joe Maddon got to Chicago in the 2015 season, to the time that they put him in as a lame duck, make or break type of manager in 2018, he got you four playoff appearances, two NL Central championships, two NLCS appearances, a World Series championship, an MVP season, a close to MVP season, and overall pretty good development and progress of that core of offensive players. And then you give him Yu Darvish, who gets hurt to start the year and is never really the guy that the Cubs hoped he would be. And then, of course, they move on from Joe Maddon after the 2019 season and bring in David Ross. And I'm not here to say that David Ross is not a good manager, but what's followed the Cubs since they made that decision to move on from Joe Maddon? All we hear about, if it's not what's happening on the field of play, is Chris Bryant on the trading block, or will they extend him? Is Anthony Rizzo on the trading block, or will they extend him? Is Javi Baez on the trading block, or will they extend him? Wilson Contreras. All these guys have basically, since Joe Maddon was shown the door, been put in that same position as Joe Maddon. And I don't know about you guys, and say I'm making excuses for pampered millionaire athletes if you want. I don't know about you guys, I don't like showing up to work every day with that type of uncertainty. If I like my boss, and I do, hi Mitch Rosen, if I like my boss and don't want him to lose his job, I don't know that the pressure that he might lose his job if I don't perform makes me better or worse. I don't know. I've never been put in that position. I would hope I'm better and I step up to the plate for the guy, but I think it's a case-by-case basis. It's a very human thing to have to deal with and react to that type of pressure. And I can tell you right now that I certainly would not like to walk into work every day and not know if I'm in a good place with my boss and my employer, or if I might be on my way out the door any day now. We're constantly seeing studies from publications like Forbes or any other industry magazine or website about business that will tell you that happier employees, employees with more peace of mind, are more productive employees, are better at what they do. And I can't tell you what, if any, improvements we would have seen on the field with any sort of certainty for Joe Maddon or Chris Bryant or Javi Baez or Wilson Contreras or anybody else, any job security or certainty that we would have gotten with those guys going back to 2018 all the way up until now. I don't know if that results in less strikeouts or more home runs or more wins or more NLCS appearances or more World Series. I don't know. I just know that constantly having uncertainty looming over your head when you show up to work every day, like the Cubs have had since the start of the 2019 season with their manager and their main core of players, is a lot of pressure. And maybe you say, well, you got to live up to the pressure. You got to overcome the pressure. That's what you got paid for. But if you're the Cubs, a lot of what being a manager or a general manager, even the owner of a team, is doing is knowing your personnel, knowing your employees, knowing your personalities, knowing what kind of human beings they are, and knowing if they're how they're going to respond to that type of pressure. And I don't think the Cubs have responded very well. I'm not saying it's the whole reason that we haven't gotten every drop of juice squeezed out of this lemon that we should have. But having uncertainty hanging over your head like this Cubs team has since the end of the 2018 season, for me, is no way to go about business and no way to expect to get the most out of your players year in and year out. I can tell you flat out, I wouldn't handle that well. If I didn't know if I was going to have a job, well, I guess I can't say have a job. All these guys were going to have jobs. Paychecks were going to keep coming in. But where I'd be working tomorrow or come July, and not knowing if my boss wants to keep me around. How many of us would perform well in that position or in that situation? I don't think a lot of us would. And it didn't really dawn on me until I read this piece by Patrick Mooney, like I said, 2 weeks ago. That's been keeping me up about the Cubs and why they didn't necessarily hit their ceiling as a unit or haven't yet. And it's 3-4 years now of going on with some of the most important key players, from your manager down to your core of young players, that have had uncertainty looming over their heads for 4 seasons now. Do you think this is part of the reason that we can point back to as to why the Cubs haven't hit their ceiling? 312-644-6767. That's how you can call me. You can shoot a text as well. You can tweet the show at 670 The Score. At Rami is tweeting. That's how you follow me. At Ramie is tweeting. Is this cloud of uncertainty hanging over the Cubs the reason they haven't reached their full potential? I'm Rami Makhlouf, in for Matt Spiegel on 670 The Score, and back right after this.
Is reckoning the wrong word to assign to what's going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to use really boring language on purpose just so I didn't get anything thrown back at me for a year. And also tried to be less verbose. That's hard for me.
There's Theo Epstein back in 2019. And hey, man, I love Theo. I do. I appreciate everything he did for the Cubs organization. That does not mean he is without fault and why this Cubs team hasn't reached full potential. And it didn't dawn on me that uncertainty hanging over this team for 3 going on 4 years now, all the way back to Joe Maddon's lame duck year, could be part of the reason, could be a contributing factor in why they haven't. And when you look at it, Not that I don't want David Ross as the manager of the Cubs, or I don't think he's been very good at it, but should Joe Maddon have even been put in the position of a lame duck year? With three playoff appearances, a World Series, two NLCS appearances, an MVP, a near MVP, and a core of young players developing at the major league level who were all making pretty good progress? And then in that 2019 season, you sign Yu Darvish to be the difference, and he goes down early in the year, and Joe Maddon never really gets the Cy Young-looking version of Yu Darvish, and that's the end of his days as the manager. And then you have Javi Baez, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and Wilson Contreras, all with uncertain contract situations looming over their heads. I don't know how any certainty for this roster or for their manager translates into better baseball or more success on the baseball field, but I think it's possible that it might. How about you? 312-644-6767. You can give me a call, or you can drop a line in the text box. And the text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Get to some of those texts in just a second. We're going to hear from Mike Bryant, father of Chris Bryant, coming up at the top of the hour. But Bob in Arlington Heights is on Hit and Run. What's up, Bob?
Hi. I don't mean to be argumentative, particularly on Mother's Day, but... I guess I would just take the inverse of your argument that, you know, these guys have failed to reach their potential because they're under a cloud of uncertainty. I would argue that they have been under a cloud of uncertainty because they failed to reach their potential. And with respect to Epstein's contention that this isn't linear, I think in the Cubs' case, it has been linear. Since 2016, it's been linear in the wrong direction. Persistent decline year after year after year. And I told your producer, I said, you know, you guys are going to consider me a blasphemer on 2 points. Point A, I will contend to my last breath that the 2016 Cubs won the World Series in spite of Joe Maddon, not because of him. And B, that, you know, after Epstein hit the escape hatch and they fired, before Epstein hit the escape hatch and after they fired Maddon or didn't renew Maddon, then they made the worst possible choice they could have made in terms of manager. And they decided to bring in David Ross, who has continued to let the inmates run the asylum. So I've said my piece. And I know I'm going to be in the minority on this, but my view is, yeah, you're under a cloud of uncertainty because you haven't performed. And, you know, if you performed, I think the contracts might have been torn up despite, you know, the Ricketts' protestations that they're poor. They would have come up with the money if you put up the numbers to justify it. So I'll sign off now and listen. Thanks.
Appreciate the call. I don't think that's blasphemy. I think he makes some fine points. And this is, I guess, a chicken or the egg type of question. Bob says that they're under a cloud of uncertainty because they haven't lived up to expectations to earn those contracts, and that very well might be. We don't know. This all goes back to human nature and how these guys react to that pressure of uncertainty for their manager, for themselves. But is it fair for guys in year three, which Baez and Bryant were, or year two, or you know, year three for Wilson Contreras, year four for Anthony Rizzo, still young and still early in their major league careers, to have that make or break mentality, to have that prove it type of mentality or condition put on them? I don't know that it is. I really don't. And like I was saying before, instead of testing or challenging your guys to be the best that they can be and to reach their full potential, how about just fostering their growth and putting them in a position to succeed, in a position where they feel comfortable and supported and can show up to work every day with some degree of certainty? I think we all want that. And I often say you can't compare your workplace to the world of professional sports and a Major League Baseball clubhouse. But I think at the end of the day, that's human nature. That's something you want in your workplace. You want to be happy. You want to like the people that you work with. You want to know that there's some degree of security. Nobody wants to show up to work walking on eggshells. We're all more productive when we're happy and secure and have some degree of certainty. That's just how we all are. I think that is one area where you can say it translates from the real world and an everyday work setting that we all go to a Major League Baseball clubhouse or an NFL locker room or an NBA locker room or anything else. From the 413 in the text line, this says, Madden was into making buddies over pushing players. View his angled post-game videos after losses, always saying how good players did. Yeah, Joe Madden was a player's manager. He's still a player's manager. But going back to that caller's point on David Ross, I don't think he has let the inmates run the asylum. David Ross has been a different style of manager than Joe Madden. He's not iron fist guy. He's not red ass manager like you see on the other side of town. But he is a guy who came in and said, we're going to do things differently, and it's not going to be all fun and games and happy-go-lucky around here. I think David Ross has done a fine job as the manager of the Cubs under real trying circumstances last year, too. I think they both have something in common, which is with different styles, and one maybe a little bit more strict than the other, Ross than Madden, is having an entire clubhouse pointed in the same direction and having each other's backs. Another text that comes in from the 815. The Cubs may not have won more due in some part to their refusal to change their launch angle swings. Bryant's recent success is an example to consider. There are certainly hard and fast baseball things like that that you can point to that the Cubs could have been better at and could have done a better job of teaching their players and developing into their players over the years. No doubt about that. But the human element of this, the human nature of this, certainly plays a part with the Cubs. And I don't know if it's the uncertainty looming over them that has played a part, has played a role in them not reaching their potential, but I certainly think it could be. Again, we're talking about 3 going on 4 years now where your manager and your core group of young players who are developing at the major league level have had a cloud hanging over them. They don't know if their manager will be there next season. They don't know if they'll be there next season. That's a tough thing to deal with. Let's get in Joanna, who's up in Wisconsin. Joanna, you're on 670 The Score. What's up?
Hi, thank you. Yes, Joanna, and interestingly enough, and you're talking about business culture, I wholeheartedly agree. I am a physician, but I've also been in leadership of my organization and the top levels of leadership. And when I was in the leadership position, the culture started shifting, and I warned everybody I could. If we do not change the culture, if we do not make it more stable, people will leave in droves. And this was before the pandemic. And the powers that be have not listened. And people, everyone I know and loved has left. And sure enough, we are putting our house up for sale and we are moving back to Chicago next month. Because after having been here for 13 and a half years, things have changed so much. So the culture definitely has something to do with it. And I agree the owners have something to do with it here for the Cubs. I mean, you want to talk about consistency? Look at Anthony Rizzo. They should have signed him before the season started. He's the team captain. He puts his heart on the line. He plays consistent baseball. And yet they came out with a contract that was totally unagreeable. So the culture has a lot to do with it here. And I do not believe the Ricketts are doing enough. So, but that's my opinion.
Thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. And I'm surprised. I've been having this discussion with Cubs fans for almost 25 minutes, and I haven't used the word culture. And that's actually the perfect word for this conversation that we're having right now. I think having some security in your clubhouse or office or warehouse culture is a good thing to have, and is good for folks' mindset when they show up for work on a day in, day out basis. And she brought up something, a possibility that I hadn't even considered, which is, Not only have guys maybe not performed at as high a level as they could because of this degree of uncertainty that looms over them, but maybe even some guys are just ready to be done with it. Just ready to move on and go work somewhere else like Joanna is. Maybe, and she talked about Anthony Rizzo and him not getting what she feels is due or deserved or just in terms of the contract offer that they gave him based on the performance he's given them since coming up to the major leagues. Man, if I'm Chris Bryant, and I came up here, I won Rookie of the Year, I won MVP, and was the driving force of an offense that won a World Series, and you haven't paid me yet? You haven't put a deal on the table that me and my agent find agreeable and acceptable. How is that even possible? What if I'm Chris Bryant, I might be looking around and going, at what level do I need to perform for you guys to pay me? Because and I know there's a camp of Cubs fans who don't want to pay Chris Bryant, who feel that he hasn't lived up to potential or expectations and might even call him a bust. But if you're being sensible and real about this thing, Chris Bryant has never not lived up to expectations when he was healthy. A healthy Chris Bryant is a very good Chris Bryant and one of the best baseball players in this league. Top five, at worst, top 10 player in this league when Chris Bryant is right. And he's showing you that right now. And despite we all knowing that, anybody who knows baseball and is looking at this from a sensible angle and perspective, despite we all seeing what Chris Bryant is when he's healthy and putting together a Rookie of the Year MVP campaign and leading a team to a World Series, you still haven't put something down that makes him happy? Or Anthony Rizzo, who's been the rock and the cornerstone and the face of this franchise and the calming presence and the leader in that clubhouse, he hasn't seen a deal that makes him happy? I might be ready to go if I was one of those guys. I might have one foot out the door if I'm one of those guys. And if you've ever been somewhere where you have one foot out the door, you're not giving your best effort. You're not reaching your maximum potential. So that's a great point by Joanne. I was just looking at it from a point of view that, you know, maybe these guys are happy working here, but just not reaching full potential because of this cloud of uncertainty hanging. I didn't even consider that. Maybe they're ready to be done with it. Maybe they're ready to get out. I don't know. Speaking of Chris Bryant, right after this, Mike Bryant, his dad, had a really good conversation with Bernstein and Rahimi. We'll bring you some of that right after this. It's Hit and Run. I'm Rami Makhlouf, in for Matt Spiegel, and back right after this on 670 The Score.
Oh, such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.